Welcome to our deep dive into Lamentations chapter two.
Ooh, this is a powerful one.
Yeah, a lot of people kind of skip over it, you
Yeah.
know, but it's really, I think, the heart of the book in a lot of ways. We're going to unpack it today. We've got, you know, scholarly analyses, we've got the historical context, we've got even some psychology woven into this.
Right.
So it's going to be a fascinating
It's a
journey.
rich tapestry, of grief and guilt,
Oh, yeah.
and then ultimately a call to prayer.
And a call to action, too.
That's right.
You know, it's not just about like, oh, following in sadness. It's about, okay, what do we do now?
Where do we go from here? How do we process this?
Exactly.
What's striking, I think, about Lamentations too, is how it immediately just pulls you into this raw emotional landscape.
Yeah, you're not eased into it at all.
No, it's like you said, walking into a city that's still smoldering from a devastating
It's
fire.
like, boom, you're right there.
You're right in the middle of it.
And what I think is really interesting is how the chapter unfolds.
Okay.
It's not just a simple lament, right?
Right.
It's structured like a dialogue with distinct voices.
Exactly.
Like we hear from different perspectives.
Yeah, we first hear from an observer, like this kind of mentor figure who's witnessing the destruction of Jerusalem and Judah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so this voice kind of sets the stage, describing the devastation in vivid detail.
We were getting that like eyewitness account.
Right, and then this voice directly addresses Zion, the personified city,
Oh, okay.
punching her to pray.
So there's this back and forth,
No.
this interplay between like observation and then call to action. And then
Exactly.
we hear from Zion herself. This
Yes.
isn't just a poem about sadness,
Right.
it's a dialogue, a conversation with God,
Precisely.
which I think is what makes it so powerful.
And that's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Because the lament acknowledges God's role in the destruction.
Whoa, okay, hold on.
It's not just, oh, we're sad.
Right.
It grapples with the tough question of why a loving
Would
God
allow this to happen?
would allow such suffering.
Yeah, because we always think about, you know, God is merciful, God is love.
Right.
So how do we reconcile that with this utter destruction that's described in Lamentations?
That's a good question. And that's where we have to look at this concept of the day of the Lord,
Okay.
a powerful idea that comes from the pre-exilic prophets.
Okay, so before we go any further,
Yeah.
let's define our terms here.
Let's do it.
For those who might not be familiar with this term, Day of the Lord, what are we talking about here?
So it was this idea of a future time when God would intervene in judgment, a consequence of human sin and turning away from him.
Oh, so there's this cause and effect.
That's right. Think of it as a reckoning, a day of accountability.
Yeah.
And Lamentations 2 uses this familiar motif
Okay.
to connect the destruction of Jerusalem directly to the warnings of those earlier prophets.
So it's almost like those ancient warnings were coming true,
Yes.
almost word for word.
Yeah.
It's like this destruction wasn't random.
Right.
It was a consequence of choices made a fulfillment of prophecy.
Exactly. The text echoes the oracle of disaster format
Oh, interesting.
used by those pre-exilic prophets.
Okay.
These oracles usually had three parts.
Okay.
First, they would outline the reason for the coming punishment.
Right.
Then they would announce God's intervention.
Okay.
And finally, they would detail the consequences people would face.
So it's like if this, then that.
Exactly. And Lamentations 2 shows these warnings coming to fruition in a chillingly accurate way.
Whoa. It's like watching a historical drama where you know how it ends,
Yeah.
but it's still devastating to watch it unfold.
You can't help but
You
watch.
can't tear your eyes away. And it's not just about the big picture, you know, war and destruction.
Right.
There are these subtle details in Lamentations too that reveal the human cost,
The personal
the
tragedies.
personal tragedies within this larger catastrophe.
Yeah, one of the most powerful examples, I think, is in verses 11 and 12.
Okay.
This image of starving infants too weak to even cry,
Oh, gosh.
dying in their mother's arms.
Yeah.
It's a stark reminder that war doesn't just destroy buildings and walls, it
Right.
shatters families and
Lives.
lives.
And that specific detail about the people asking for grain and wine
Yes.
really struck me because it's such a simple, everyday request. But
Absolutely
in
not.
that context, it speaks volumes.
Grain and wine were common storage items,
Right.
staples of daily
You
life.
know, just normal, everyday things.
Yeah, the fact that people are desperately begging for them indicates a complete breakdown of normalcy,
Yeah, they've lost
the
everything.
utter desperation of their situation.
And then there's the mention of false prophets in verse 14. These were individuals who offered empty reassurances.
Right, ignoring the need for repentance,
Yeah.
offering false hope instead of urging change.
And it makes you think about who we choose to listen to, even today.
That's so true.
You know, because sometimes we gravitate towards those messages that align with what we want to hear,
Exactly.
even if they lack truth or depth.
Right? It's like we're wired to want to believe the easy, comforting lie rather than face the hard truth.
Yeah, and clinging to those lies can have devastating consequences, as we see in Lamentations.
Right, and Lamentations 2 seems to be suggesting that true prophets, the ones who speak God's truth, don't shy away from calling out sin and urging repentance, even if it's unpopular.
Even if it's hard to hear.
Exactly. So this raises the questions, how do we discern truth from falsehood?
Especially in the face of difficult circumstances.
That's a really good question. I think it highlights the importance of carefully considering the source of information.
Okay.
And being willing to challenge our own biases.
Right. Like, are we seeking comfort or are we seeking truth? Because sometimes those things are in conflict.
And speaking of truth in Lamentations 2, that's what leads to this powerful shift from grief to action.
Okay.
Zion's prayer in verses 20-22 is not passive.
It's not just, oh, woe is me.
It's a direct appeal to God.
Okay.
Laying bare the suffering she has experienced.
She's bringing receipts.
She's bringing the receipts. And Zion's prayer is structured around five specific examples of trauma.
Five?
Yes. So we have mothers forced to eat their own children.
Oh, my God.
We have priests and prophets killed in the sanctuary.
In the sanctuary.
The indiscriminate slaughter of young and old.
Okay.
The deaths of young men and women.
Wow.
And the destruction of children during the invasion.
That's a lot.
It's brutal and unflinching.
And the language that she uses is so raw, so visceral, it almost feels like she's accusing God.
Right.
Yeah, like
right.
Demanding that he see and acknowledge the pain he has allowed.
It's a powerful example of wrestling with faith in the face of unimaginable suffering.
It's like, how could you let this happen?
Right.
And it also demonstrates, I think, a deeper understanding of God's justice and the consequences of straying from his path.
Yeah.
But it's still that tension, right?
Yeah.
Between, like, I understand why this happened.
Right.
But it doesn't make it hurt any less.
It's a struggle to reconcile the head and the heart.
Yeah.
The intellectual understanding with the visceral experience of suffering.
Yeah, and what I find really interesting is that this tension isn't resolved in the text.
It's left hanging unresolved.
Which, in a way, is even more powerful.
I think so.
More relatable.
Yeah.
Because it reflects the messy, complicated nature of faith.
Especially when we're confronted with suffering.
Yeah, there's no neat and tidy answer.
Right.
It's a raw, open wound.
And that rawness, that vulnerability, it's an invitation for us to step into that space of wrestling with faith.
Okay.
To ask the hard questions, to grapple with the tension between our understanding of God and the sometimes brutal realities of our experiences.
It's like the text is saying it's okay to not have all the answers.
Yes.
It's okay to feel confused, angry, heartbroken.
Bring those feelings to God.
He can handle it.
That's such a crucial point. Lamentations 2 normalizes the struggle.
Yeah.
It gives us permission to be honest with God.
To bring our whole selves.
To bring our whole selves before him, even the broken parts.
And that honesty, that vulnerability, it's a starting point for healing.
It is.
It's the first step towards finding meaning and purpose, even in the midst of suffering.
Yeah.
But it's not easy, is it?
No, it's not.
To hold on to faith when everything around you seems to be falling apart.
No, but Lamentations 2 reminds us that even in the darkest of times.
Yeah.
Even when we don't understand God is present.
He's there.
He hears our cries.
He sees our pain.
And he invites us to bring our burdens to him.
That invitation is open to all of us. No matter what we're going through, no matter how lost or broken we may feel, we can always turn to God in prayer.
We can pour out our hearts to him.
Knowing that he is listening.
That he cares.
That's the beauty of lament.
It allows us to express the full spectrum of our emotions to God.
Without holding back.
And through that process, we might discover a new depth of faith.
A humility.
A resilience we never knew we possessed.
So how does this ancient lament speak to us today? What can we learn from Zion's journey through grief and her desperate plea to God? We'll explore those questions as we continue our deep dive into Lamentations 2. So we left off with Zion, like, pouring out her pain, you know, anguish to God in this raw, honest prayer.
It's like she's laying out a legal case, almost.
Yeah.
Presenting evidence
of
the suffering that she and her people have endured.
And what's so fascinating to me is how she uses, like, these specific details to paint this picture of, like, the horrors of war.
Right. It's not just a general lament.
Right.
It's carefully constructed.
And an argument.
To make God truly see and feel the weight of the destruction.
Yeah. It's not just like, I'm sad this happened.
Right.
It's like, look at what happened.
Exactly. She's not just emoting. She's employing sophisticated use of rhetoric.
Yeah.
Persuasive language aimed at getting God to act.
It's like she's saying, I need you to do something about this.
Yeah. It adds a whole other dimension to her prayer.
Totally. But there's also this underlying tension in her words, right?
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, she seems to understand God's role in the destruction.
Yes. She's heard the prophets. She knows the scriptures.
Right.
So she understands the why behind what happened.
But then she's this gut-wrenching reality
right.
of what she's witnessed.
The sheer horror of it all.
Yeah. And it's as if she's saying, like, okay, I get the reasons.
Right.
But that doesn't make the pain any less real.
Exactly. It's a struggle to reconcile the head and the heart,
yeah.
the intellectual understanding with the visceral experience of suffering.
And what I find really striking is that this tension isn't resolved in the text.
It's left hanging unresolved.
Which, in a way, I think is even more powerful.
I agree.
More relatable.
Yeah.
Because it reflects the messy, complicated nature of faith.
Especially when we're confronted with suffering.
Right. There's no, like, neat and tidy answer.
Yeah, there's no easy solution.
It's a raw, open wound.
And that rawness, that vulnerability, it's an invitation for us to step into that space
oh, that's good.
Of wrestling with faith,
yeah.
to ask the hard questions, mm-hmm. to grapple with that tension between our understanding of God and the sometimes brutal realities of our experiences.
It's like the text is saying, it's okay to not have all the answers.
Right.
It's okay to feel confused, angry, heartbroken.
Bring those feelings to God.
Like, he can handle it.
He can handle it. That's such a crucial point. Lamentations 2 normalizes the struggle.
Right. It's not like you're a bad person for yeah. feeling these things.
It gives us permission to be honest with God.
To bring our whole selves.
To bring our whole selves before him, even the broken parts.
And that honesty, that vulnerability, it's a starting point for healing.
It is.
It's the first step towards finding meaning and purpose, even in the midst of suffering.
Yeah.
But it's not easy, is it?
No, it's not.
To hold on to faith when everything around you seems to be falling apart.
No, but Lamentations 2 reminds us that even in the darkest of times, even when we don't understand God is present,
he's there.
He hears our cries. He sees our pain. And he invites us to bring our burdens to him.
And that invitation is open to all of us, no matter what we're going through. No matter how lost or broken we may feel, we can always turn to God in prayer.
We can pour out our hearts to him, knowing that he is listening, that he cares.
That's the beauty of lament.
It allows us to express the full spectrum of our emotions to God.
Without holding back.
And through that process, we might discover a new depth of faith, a resilience we never knew we possessed.
So how does this ancient lament speak to us today? What can we learn from Zion's journey through grief and her desperate plea to God? We'll continue exploring those questions right after this.
We've been talking about lament, you know,
yeah.
as this powerful form of prayer, a way to kind of process our pain
right.
and grapple with those big questions.
Yeah, when life throws us those curveballs.
Yeah, those curveballs. And it's not about, like, sugarcoating our emotions.
Nope. It's about bringing them to God, like, in their rawest live.
And what's striking about Lamentations 2 is how it models this.
Yeah.
This process of engaging with both the intellectual and the emotional aspects of trauma.
Right, because we need both.
We need both.
Like, we need to understand why this happened.
Yes.
But we also need to allow ourselves to feel the pain.
To grieve, to be angry.
Yeah, it doesn't shy away from the tough stuff.
No, it doesn't.
Like the image of mothers being forced to eat their own children.
That's about as raw as it gets.
I mean, it's brutal and it's shocking.
And it's not something you'd expect to find in a sacred text.
Right, but it's there.
It's there, and I think it's meant to be.
Okay.
Because it forces us to confront the true cost of war.
The depths of human suffering.
The depths of human suffering that often go unacknowledged.
Unacknowledged.
These aren't just abstract concepts.
Right.
These are the lived experiences of real people.
And by bringing those horrors to light.
Yes.
By naming them so explicitly, it's like the text is giving voice to the voiceless.
Yeah.
That it's saying, this happened, this is real, we cannot look away.
Exactly. And that act of bearing witness,
yeah.
of acknowledging the suffering, is a crucial step in the healing process. Both for individuals and for communities.
So Lamentations 2 isn't just like a historical record.
No.
It's like a guide.
It's a guide for how to face our own darkness.
Ooh, I like that.
How to find our way back to the light.
And it reminds us that even when we feel utterly alone, God is there.
He's present in our pain.
He is your cries.
And he invites us to bring our burdens to him.
So it's an invitation to vulnerability.
Yes.
To honesty.
To an authentic relationship with God.
It's a reminder that faith isn't about pretending everything's okay.
It's about holding on to God even when we don't understand.
Even when we feel like letting go.
It's like saying, God, I don't get it, but I'm still here.
I'm still holding on.
That's a powerful statement of faith.
Because it's in those moments of wrestling, of questioning, that our faith is often refined and made stronger. So Lamentations 2, this ancient lament, it's actually a timeless guide.
It is.
It teaches us how to process trauma.
How to grapple with the tough questions.
And how to hold on to hope even in the midst of darkness.
It shows us that it's okay to doubt, it's okay to be angry, it's okay to question.
That those feelings are normal.
Those feelings, those struggles, they're all part of what it means to be human.
And bringing those raw emotions to God, that's what true faith is all about.
Trusting that He can handle our messy, complicated selves.
That even in the midst of our brokenness, He sees us, He loves us, and He's working to redeem our pain.
And that's a message we all need to hear, no matter what we're facing.
No matter how lost or broken we may feel.
We are not alone. God is with us. He is listening.
And He is bigger than any challenge we might face.
Absolutely. I think that's a perfect note to end on.
Yeah, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Lamentations 2.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you found it insightful and thought-provoking, and we encourage you to keep exploring this powerful text. Let it challenge you, let it comfort you, and let it guide you on your own journey of faith.
Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, keep believing.